to order. And, how do we do it? We're going to start a work session on Senate Bill 818. This is relating to OHSU Pediatric Dental Residency Program.
Judy?
Okay, yes. Senate Bill 818 has not been heard by a prior committee. This particular bill, what it does, first of all, in 1994, the OHSU eliminated this particular program due to budget constraints. So what this bill does was originally would appropriate money, $2 million, for this. But you'll find that there is an amendment here today that's reduced down to $1. Just a little background on this. There are approximately 50 pediatric dentists in the state, and many of them are nearing retirement. In fact, in general, dentists in the state, 45% are over age 50, and 27% are over age 55. So you probably have some in this area that are going to retire. And there's approximately 500,000 children 9 years of age and under whom they need pediatric dental care.
We do have some amendments that have been, some language that has been offered, and you probably have it in front of you. They're conceptual.
Is it either? And then Madam Clerk.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Madam Kochner.
Unless you want to have a lot of discussion on this bill, I really support the pediatric dentistry program, and I believe it's something, you know, that we wanted. Frankly, when we gave OHSU a $4 million increase in their budget, mm-hmm. It was one of the things we wanted to be able to fund, but they came back and told us that their existing dentistry program needed help, and so we had the funding go towards that. But I would very much like to move this forward, even though it's only going to be for the dollar, because I think there's some benefit in recognizing the need for the pediatric dentistry program.
Okay.
So I would move the LSO's proposed amendment that we have in force today, dated July 10, 1999.
And Representative Lewis has moved LSO's proposed amendment dated July 10th, essentially in section 2, it's removing some of the language, as you can read in Section 2, stating subject to the availability of funding, OHSU shall establish a program only to the extent that funds are appropriated to the Department of Administrative Services for the public corporation for the purposes of funding the program established in Section 1, which is pediatric dentistry. Is there a discussion?
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I know the medical school gets the medical graduate funding through Department of Human Resources. So is this dental program eligible for that money? Or is this a question Doug will know?
I don't know.
I don't know. That's you're right. There is money to go to OHSU for graduate, for their graduate teaching program,
yes, uh-huh.
That comes from the federal government.
Yes.
But I don't know if that's, I honestly don't know. In the case of the dental school as well as the medical school.
Mm-hmm. So putting a dollar there makes them eligible if they qualify.
Well, I think, why are we putting a dollar there?
Placeholder, and it doesn't. I mean, essentially,
I'm not sure because I think they can go raise their own funds without this dollar. But I think it makes an important statement that we do view pediatric dentistry as important, and that we would like to see future legislatures be able to find the funding for this program.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. To summarize, this is essentially a hunting license. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is there any objection? Hearing and seeing that the motion has passed.
Madam Chair,
Representative Lewis.
I move Senate Bill 818 as amended by our conceptual amendments to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lewis moves Senate Bill 818 as amended conceptually to the full committee with the due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none. Okay, since you're going, maybe, are we doing this in order?
You can do it in order.
Okay, since I see Senator Duncan here, and we're going to have a hearing on Senate Bill 540, I would invite you up to, we'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 540. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's very nice to be with you on this beautiful Saturday afternoon.
Yes. I'm so glad to be here.
Don't mention anything about beautiful.
Well, at least you're here where you can look outside. Well, Madam Chair, Senate Bill 540 was brought to us during the during the regular committee hearings in Health and Human Services. And Senator Shields served on that committee. Charles Byrd is sitting next to me, and his daughter, Arwen Byrd, who could not be with us today. And she's had a spinal injury and is in a wheelchair, but because of the last minute changes and so forth, could not be with us today. And the testimony was certainly got to us all at that point that very exciting possible breakthroughs in this whole area, and we'd love to be a part of it. And Senate Bill 540, what it really does is establishes a spinal cord injury research board, and appointed by the governor, and just the board would be made up of professionals in neurology and in other areas. And then the idea was that the board would be able to be a recipient to review grant applications and to receive money from other sources for this research idea. I think maybe one of the mistakes we made at that time, and I've been rethinking it, we probably should have just put a very small amount of money in here and just get this thing started at this particular point so that this group would be in a position to encourage grants and looking for other resources rather than just relying on the state funds, because I recognize the problem that you folks have with that particular problem. But as we listen to the testimony and the potential and the possible breakthrough that could happen in this particular area, and most of us have friends who are in this situation, and we sort of see the light of day out there, but we recognize it's not going to just happen. It's going to take a lot of work, and I think our committee recognized at that time that this was an exciting challenge, and frankly, we'd like to see state government be a part of it. And so that's why I have asked sure we need to get a hearing on this, to get something, get it on the table, to get to thinking about it, because I think it is a very serious issue and we'll have to see something going on in this area. Okay. May I turn to Mr. Beard at this point?
Thank you. Thanks, Senator. Co-Chair Q-Tug, committee members, thanks for hearing me today. Following on a short notice, we're happy to get on the agenda to present ourselves. We have, as Senator Duncan said, both of our daughters, my wife and I, both of our daughters were in the same car accident. They were rear-ended by a drunk driver, and they have both recovered and since the accident have finished college and graduated. The older daughter went through in 4 years, and took me 5 years to get through back to the accident. So
she is a remarkable person.
I admire her a lot. But it's come clear to me over the past few years since the accident, and I know a lot more about spinal injury than I ever wanted to. I can assure you that the cure is on the horizon, and there's a lot of momentum building in many states. As the information package was just handed out to you, there's 14 states have similar bills, and 5 have passed recent bills. So there's a lot of laws already in place, and the movement is on. We just read a month ago that they're starting human trials on some of the advancements that are made. So human trials on spinal injury is being started right now. In the next 2 to 4 years, we're going to see some results of that and some additional studies. So exciting times. Scientists here in Oregon that I've talked to said that this is an area that needs to be funded and researched, because there's no one really speaking, no one in the private industry speaking for this group. Drug companies fund acute care type of remedies. For instance, when you get hit and you get to the hospital in an emergency room, there's a lot of things that happen really quickly. a lot of those things have been developed through the private drug companies. Over the long term, the chronic care, chronic cure has not been funded because there's not a lot of representatives, a representation financially. A lot of people who are spinal injured are in the, don't have a lot of money. So the researchers that I talked to said this is an area that needs some support from the state, and I think a lot of states are agreeing with that. We have presented a bill, as Senator Duncan has described, but it is flawed because of the general fund funding, and we put together an amendment, and I have a copy with me today of that amendment, which fixes this funding flaw. And as the handout, your green, your lime green sheet shows, that when the bill is amended, it will not cost taxpayers any money. It'll be self-funded. And what we're proposing...
The law-abiding taxpayers.
The law-abiding taxpayers. What we're proposing is the creation of an additional surcharge of $2 only on the commission of crimes or conviction of crimes, criminal conviction. And this is a mechanism that's already in place in the state. We're recommending that we add only $2, which would be enough to create seed money, create a significant amount of money that the board could deal with, and use it to attract other monies in the form of matching funds. And I think also in your package there's a list of potential matching funds that could be available for a mature program that could be in exceed $1 million, maybe $1.5 million a year coming into the state. So this is by no means a small effort if we put the $2 in place and to make it work. Now, what I urge you to do is to accept this amendment and to go immediately into work session to consider it so that you can deal with this today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that.
Well, sure, I failed to introduce myself, too. I'm Senator Bob Duncan from District Number 12 of Clackamas County.
Thank you.
And I recognize that it is a public hearing and the work session is scheduled, and I don't know that you're going to be probably not be able to deal with anything, but I was thinking, is any way to even get anything open in there so we can at least get the board going, which would be helpful. I'd love to at least get established, even if there isn't much money with it, to take a point just to get the movement going. I don't know what the anything this committee can do would certainly appreciate, and I really do appreciate the chair opening up this hearing for us because I recognize the tight deadline that you were in.
Very quickly. Two quick questions. One, the $2, that's probably part of the unitary assessment, is that correct? Second question, we just did this Bill 818 that appropriated $1. I mean, is that would that be an appropriate kind of thing here that would create the thing and allow you to have your hunting license? I just wonder.
He probably doesn't know the answer to that, and I do, and the answer is no.
Okay, I don't know.
The unitary assessment works differently. It is an assessment that exists, and essentially getting a dollar would be, you couldn't really get a dollar like that for this.
Okay. I just didn't know the difference between the bills. That's all I said.
What little I've been told about that is if others are assessed to the unitary assessment, that someone or one of your teachers here in the legislature will put them all together and it'll come out in the end as being $3, for instance, if they're equal. If that dollar is equal to this $2, then it'll be $3 in the end.
I think when he was referring to a dollar, he's talking about just $1.
And that's what, Senator Shields was referring to one actual dollar. Mm-hmm. If we did it with the unitary assessment, it would be raising the whole unitary assessment $1, mm-hmm. and that would be a huge amount because a minute percentage of the unitary assessment is a hard thing to... It is really not very easy to get money into the to get a portion of the unitary assessment. I should just tell you that it's one way of going about trying to obtain funding, but it is a very hard process to get into that system of unitary assessment. Representative Wilson.
I see a handout here, part of your packet, that talks about grants.
Mm-hmm.
Do you anticipate any funding through these grants? Is that a possibility? Or have you applied? Or what is it?
There's a Pat could answer. Pat, who's also on the list to speak, could speak better to that question if you wouldn't mind, since Representative Logan. But
I'm sure, do you mind if she joins us at this point?
No. I was going to call her up anyway.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm not sure I understand that question, Representative Logan.
Was asking if you have applied for these grants that are described, there are four described,
right,
and what you hold out as a possibility or a hope of getting money. Do you feel this is
I feel very comfortable with these possibilities.
For the record, you need to identify yourself.
I'm sorry, what? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Pat Richards. I have a daughter that's on court injury at 65 level. I've been working on this for a year.
Thank you.
These are matching grants. Like this first one, we put up $25,000. We save word and put up $25,000 out of the fund. And then there's grants that are available, matching funds from some are from NIH, others are from other sources. And this list was made up by a doctor at Rutgers. He's a research scientist, Dr. Young. His letter is also in here. He's a wonderful source of information, and he's been helping the different states to get themselves in a position to be awarded these different grants. That's why I call them seed grants, because they're a good start. You have to have money to do it. You know?
Because they're all matching grants?
They're not all matching grants, but most of them are, yes. And some of them are more difficult to get than others.
Mm-hmm.
She explained to me that some of the smaller laboratories actually are able to do quite a lot because of they don't all have to be UCLA type laboratories. I mean, they're smaller. They seem to be able to get a lot done, but they have more freedom. And he made up this grant for those states that are just starting out. He thought I'd got $1.5 million a year is what it would take to.
Thank you. I just wondered if you had anticipating something, but I see what you're suggesting here is a state award that would help to get the grant.
Right. You have to have money.
I'm sure.
I'm good, yeah.
I think that the thing I don't know how we might do it. I recognize that getting the money is not probably in the cards at this particular point. I don't know what we might be able to do to get the board put together. Most of those, I would say, with no expense, but to get to start developing some planning for the next session. I don't know. Anyway, we might do
that. Voluntary board?
Right.
With per diem or anything?
Right. That's what I'm just wondering if we can do. But you're talking about high-level people who I think are probably interested in and might be willing to do that.
Why can't they do that without?
Well, I'm just wondering if it might not need the offices of the state. And I wish I had thought of that earlier, but I am thinking in terms of...
You might think about it between now and the end of next week.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Right, I'm just saying what we might, we might take it out of the ways and means concept,
right,
and if we could get it moved, so maybe we could get
that sounds
back,
like a
back to our
thoughtful idea. If if you put together essentially it would be a volunteer,
right,
but one with the experience and credentials,
mm-hmm,
to actually come and deliver a report or.
And you have something to
right
afford the waste needs and early in the session. And if we could put that together, we would be, I think, really moving ahead. It's not exactly, I'm sure it's not.
No.
When you live with this day to day, as these folks do, you want something now, and I understand their perspective. But I think I'd like to, if you lose it, I would like to get something. So I may be pursuing that and working with you on that.
Madam Chair?
Senator Dirfler's committee, what is that going to be called now? Is that going to remain open? Would there be an opportunity to possibly...
Public affairs.
Public affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So there will be a committee that maybe could...
Madam Chair.
Senator Shields.
Would it be appropriate to refer to that committee, and that would let Senator Duncan work on it this week? That would just help the process, because mm-hmm. it's here now. If we refer to there, it would probably speed up the process. We wouldn't have to address
well,
it.
Well, I would prefer, we would need to go into a work session to do that.
Oh, that's
and
right.
What I'd like to do is not go into a work session today on this. And there may be another relating clause. It won't say to spinal mm-hmm. injury, but there may be some other relating clause that has an available bill.
I'll go to work on that right away.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Bill Kemp, did you want to speak today or just acknowledge?
No, I have a lot of information available.
Please just
read it. Email it to me.
Maybe. Bill, can you bring your chair forward?
Well, I can't see you, but thank you for recognizing me.
We can see the side of you. So.
That's the best side, too. I'm Bill Kemp. Yeah, I was injured in a bicycle accident a year and a half ago. To this point, I am... supposedly worth just over $1 million. And that's just to get me this far. There have been no chance for testing of spinal cord regeneration. They have, at this point, no way of giving me a hope or a chance that the spinal cord will return to normal. And probably the hardest part on a spinal cord injured person is their life literally has changed. Not just mine, but my family, wife, the kids, I am very fortunate. I work full time at the previous company, Precision Cast Parts. They have bent over backwards along with Rio at Good Samaritan to get me back to work. And the other thing I wanted to mention is whether I'm at home, traveling, at work, I always have to have a nurse or a competent caregiver with me at all times. So... open doors, et cetera, et cetera. That's expensive, and it would be a whole lot cheaper for insurance companies if we could put more money more time and more expertise into spinal cord research. And that's about all I got.
Okay, thank you very much.
I appreciate you letting me talk.
Well, I appreciate you coming and telling us about this, and wish you Godspeed. And certainly I will help Senator Duncan to try to get this, if nothing else, this relating clause somewhere so that we can create a board that will look at this and create some means of research in the future.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
And that is, they also have helped other quadriplegics that are just starting their rehabilitation for their injury. And there are a number of them out there that have essentially given up on doing anything constructive. They're constantly in a bad mood. They're hard to get along with. And they were very productive people before. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, Madam Chair, I just want to thank the Chair and the members of the committee, because I know there's a lot of interest in this, a lot of concern. You're under some terrible constraints, and I think just the fact that you were able to find time to give us this opportunity is very, very appreciated. I really want to thank the Chair for doing this. Thank you very much.
I want to know, what does Mr. Kemp do? He said he works in the physician cast part, but what is his employment?
What is his occupation?
I mean, what does he do in the company?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Senator Yee is wondering what your position is at Precision Cast Parts.
Right now, I am working on cost of parts.
Okay.
Well, trying to streamline the process. I've worked research and development for 15 years, and I have a number of patents with
the company,
And I intend
to continue that, and they're supplying me with everything I need.
That's right. Madam
Chair.
Duncan.
My next door neighbor was injured about 5 years ago, and he is still at least he's fortunate enough to be able to continue working. He's a computer man, and he works in his home and communicates via computer, does all of his work. He goes in, he works for the city of Portland. He goes in once a week just so that they don't forget who he is and that he is a part of the team, that he does all of his work in there. So it's nice when they do hire them, but so many people are not even that concerned. Well, thank you very much.
Senator Duncan, what I would like to do is I am going to briefly open a work session and refer this bill to the Public Affairs Committee. And will you commit to me then to try to work out amendments to be able to make this?
I'm sure that's great. Okay. I think that's a great
I'm going to open the work session on Senate Bill 540. So, okay. What we need to do, I can't open a work session. I have to give 1 hour's notice.
Okay.
I'll come back. We'll come back in an hour, and I'll open the work session to refer this bill to the Public Affairs Committee. And in the meantime, you can go down to Legislative Council and start drafting your amendments drawn up for, I suppose, for Monday.
Okay.
So,
thank you very much. We're very disciplined.
Okay. You do, but I don't know if Public Affairs is open. Thank you very much. And let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 540. And we're going to open the work session on House Bill 3128. Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Sheila.
You broke it.
Okay, basically, well, I'm not sure.
House Bill 3128 relates to emotionally disturbed children, and the proposal is to amend this bill. There are several proposed amendments. The first is as you'll see in the memo, these are conceptual amendments. They haven't yet been drafted by Lit Council. In line 5 of the bill, we have the State Commission on Children and Families, because this is an expansion of the day and residential treatment programs which are run through the Mental Health Division. In line 5 and 6, because the funding that is to be appropriated here is for 1 year only, we would delete the biennial reference and insert a fiscal year reference, so it's for the second year of the biennium. That then would roll up in the next budget period to a full biennial amount. In line 6, we adjust the funding from the $400,000 that's shown in the bill to $200,000. And also in line 6, we delete the number 15 because the smaller amount of funding may not fully cover 15 beds, so we just wanted to leave that flexible. And then we would delete the emergency clause because this is, again, funding just for the second year of the biennium. So that, those are the legislative fiscal office recommendations on the bill.
Is there a discussion?
Madam Chair,
is this a new service there?
Do they have a
they have
school or something?
It's not new. This exists.
Is this an increase?
Yes, it looks like it is an increase.
This is an existing program. It would add some beds to that.
15 beds?
Probably something a little less than 15 beds.
And because it would have many do they serve now?
I do not have that information. I'm sorry. I wasn't able to read that. I can get you that information.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lewis.
I'm going to be honest. I'm not familiar with the program in Dental County, but I'm sure it's similar to some of the residential treatment programs that are run in my district. And they do serve a population of very seriously, as it says, seriously emotionally disturbed children. And they, perform a very important function in serving those young people. So, therefore, I would move the conceptual amendments as outlined in legislative fiscal recommendation from Sheila Baker dated July 10, 1999.
Representative Lewis moves the conceptual amendments into House Bill 3128 as outlined by the legislative fiscal staff. Is there a discussion?
Is this for low-income families only, or do we provide regardless of income?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, this is not restricted by income, is my understanding. Some of the children are eligible for Medicaid, but that's not necessarily a requirement of the program.
So is there a income test to charge for services according to the level of income?
Madam Chair, Senator, I do not believe that there is.
Well, I just believe that if the family can afford it, they ought to share the cost.
Mm-hmm.
We can provide more to the families with low income.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a.
So
But usually, Madam Chair, whenever I ask that question, people always tell me the administration costs more than what you receive. But I believe the principle is to help the ones who need the help and allow the families who can afford it to pay for part of the cost.
What I understand of this program is that it is somewhat unique in that the individuals that it serves, they are extremely emotionally affected kids, and there may not be any other place for these kids to be served. So even if somebody had the income to be able to have them served in some other place,
this is the only place they can go. Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably true in Douglas County for sure.
Madam Chair, I just know from my own district that our residential treatment facilities have long waiting lists. I mean, and they do in fact take children in from all over the state. We don't just take local kids in because these are children that are, mm-hmm. are so, you know, have such severe problems that they can't be cared for at home. I mean, they're just very severely disturbed children and need a professional setting in which to be taken care of. Again, I don't know the specific one in Douglas County, but I know it's probably one in Yamhill County.
Anyone, what I'm saying, anyone in the department that can answer the question so that we can charge according to the family's income.
I see somebody coming from. Charge.
Good afternoon. My name is Margaret Johnson, and I'm the Deputy Administrator from the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division. Madam Chair and Senator Yee, the programs, the DARTS programs, which are basically a day treatment program that are located throughout the state, serve a combination of Medicaid-eligible children and general fund children. There is also the opportunity for privately financed capacity in these programs, but for this particular program, the design is intended to serve children whose families are either a combination of Medicaid-eligible children or families who are considered, I think, probably the working poor. So this would be a expansion of an existing program. The program currently serves adolescents, and it currently contract with them for 15 beds. This would add another 15 beds to serve children from 5 to 12 years old. As I understand the design of the program.
And Martha, do you charge the insurance companies, the one who have insurance companies for the services?
Madam Chair, Senator, you know, we don't directly charge them, but the provider may.
The provider may. You are the provider.
The service provider. The provider from, in this case, the provider is located in Douglas County.
Oh, they may.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think they should.
I'll bet they do. If they have anywhere to charge anybody any more money, they will do it. Representative Loken?
Well, I was questioning if, is this similar to the Riverbend Youth Center? Are you familiar with that in Clackamas County? Now, that's not just a day center. That's 24 hours a day. And these children who are very emotionally disturbed who are there. A similar type program then?
Madam Chair, Representative Loken, I am not specifically familiar with the range of services that are provided by this program. It's called Riverside in Douglas County. I don't know if they have a residential component that's also attached to the program, but this particular service is a day treatment service.
And they live at home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they live in foster care placements or at home.
Mm-hmm. We have a motion before us. Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing the motion pass was to amend the bill. The chair would move House Bill 3128 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing on that bill. Motion has passed. And I'll carry it. I will carry it to the full committee, and we'll have Senator Fisher carry it on the floor of the Senate. And has this been to the House yet, or is this?
No, it has not. It's directed to away from me.
Can we have Chris? Yes, that's been approved. Okay, we'll close work session then on House Bill 3128. We'll open a work session on House Bill 3147. And a work session on Senate Bill 941 combined.
Bill 3147 was relating to the Medically Fragile Children's Pool Fund, and the intention today is to address that issue in part, but not particularly move that bill. The bill originally established an assessment against insurers to finance in-home care services for medically fragile children, and the relating clause would require, if we move that bill, to create another fund. But there is $250,000 general fund available to expand services to medically fragile children, and included in the legislative fiscal office recommendations is a conceptual amendment to add that to Senate Bill 941. Senate Bill 941 is a bill that was created by Senate Judiciary to develop a outpatient and residential treatment program for persons with dual diagnosis. That program will not be funded, and so the proposal is to use that as the vehicle for both the funding for the medically fragile children and an additional $1.9 million general fund that's available for a pilot program for atypical antipsychotic medications. This is something that this committee was interested in during the discussions on the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Division budget. So if you look in the third paragraph of my July 10th memo, then you'll see the conceptual amendments that we are recommending. One is basically to delete the existing bill, then add the $250,000 general fund appropriation for the medically fragile child services, and then add a $1.9 million appropriation to the emergency board for the pilot program for the medications. This is somewhat similar to what happened last biennium. There was a $1.3 million reservation in the emergency fund for the division to come back in and indicate how it was going to be used for some medications. The idea here is that the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division would work with interested parties, including the pharmaceutical companies, the local providers, the county programs, to determine how a pilot program that would address this issue could be developed, and come back into the emergency board and request the available funds before January 1st. And that included in the pilot program is to be a provision for an Oregon Health Science University analysis of those program expenditures so that there would be some outcome information and some cost-benefit information at the end of that pilot period. And so, again, the recommendation is a special purpose appropriation to the emergency board for that point and an approval of a budget note that gives that direction.
Okay. Are there questions or comments? Representative Strobeck was the one that brought forward House Bill 3147, the medically fragile children, for medically fragile children. And yesterday he spoke to it just a little bit. He said that the idea behind House Bill 3147 was his initial idea, and then he learned that there was a line item in MHDDSD for medically fragile children. And so this will enable us to put at least this $250,000 into that area in MHDDSD, realizing, of course, that the original bill asked for $5.8 million, and that really is probably what it takes to serve all of the families that have these medically fragile children. But this does add a little to the fund, any funds that are there, if there are any, but it will at least help some. And if there's any way that can be built upon, we want to continue to try to do that. But we should realize this doesn't completely take care of the problem, obviously, by the dollar amount, but we did want to put some amount toward that because it's an extreme burden on those families. And then we had
I had a question on that. I understand there are about 40 families who have
50, I think.
Okay, a large number mm-hmm. who have these medically fragile children mm-hmm. who are struggling with this challenge. And so, how will the $250,000 be allocated? Will it be allocated just to 3 or 4 families that cover all their costs, or will it be distributed? Or how will the families that are going to be collected?
Madam Chair, Representative Roth, I can't answer that. Perhaps the agency can. My understanding, though, is that this amount would serve probably a couple of children, maybe more than that if there's some ability to leverage those funds.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah,
please.
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jean Kitson. I am the medical director for the Office of ED Services, and I am the supervisor of the Medically Fragile Children's Unit. We currently serve 45 children, pay for their nursing and their other needs that they have. The anticipation is that there are 50 more children out there who do not meet the Medicaid income requirements, and what we would do is off of the wait list, we would take the next 4, 2, 3, 4, 5, however many that we could stretch the funds to match and expand it.
And the question I had is, with the term, would you cover all their medical costs, or would you cover how would that work?
With the children that we have, that we would accept, if they have insurance, we would anticipate that the insurance would continue to pay for whatever the insurance is currently paying for, and we would pay for only that the insurance does not pay for, which is frequently private duty nursing, which is a very costly service.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Representative Lewis?
I would move the conceptual amendment presented by Sheila Baker, dated July 10, 1999, the conceptual amendment to Senate Bill 941, which deletes the bill in its current form and would put in the $250,000 general fund appropriation to MHCDFD for in-home care services of medically fragile children, and would add a $1.9 million special appropriation to the Emergency Board for a pilot program for atypical antipsychotic medication, and with the rest of the language that they would, that those funds would not be allocated until January 1, 2000, after they come forward with the plan to the Emergency Board.
And the budget numbers.
No.
Okay. Representative Lewis has moved the recommendations by Legislative Fiscal Office to move into Senate Bill 941, as she has stated. I won't restate it, but we're moving the medically fragile children $250,000 and $1.9 million special appropriation for atypical antipsychotic medication sent to the emergency board. Is there a discussion? Senator Lee.
Why is it so expensive to have the pilot program for this medication? $1.9 million. What would it do besides develop a plan in the pilot program? I mean, why is it
well, it's more than a plan. It is the actual program.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea behind this plan is, we heard during the session from some individuals who had family members who had been able to receive and take the second generation antipsychotic drugs, which enabled them to go to work and participate in society a whole lot more. And these drugs, if given to individuals with these mental illnesses, can actually help people to get into society and not have the side effects of the old first generation drugs. But this pilot project is going to be a study, because we're always told to make this investment that it will save us money in the long run. What this pilot project is going to do is actually follow the participants to show a savings, and that's why the Oregon Health Sciences University is involved, and there will be a number of participants. I'm not sure what the number is, but hopefully enough to have a sampling to really prove that there is by using atypical antipsychotic drugs, and that would be in our prison system, in our mental health, our mental hospital system, and various places. So,
Madam Chair,
Representative Lewis.
I would just like to speak to this briefly. I have spent some time with my local group as part of NAMI, which is the national group that deals with mental illness. And it's just primarily the families of people who have loved ones with these illnesses. And I wouldn't purport myself to be an expert on it, but I did learn a lot from that. I was a little unsure myself of whether or not we really would achieve savings in our court system and in our community corrections and in our prison population and in our mental health hospitals. But when you hear the stories from these families about their family members who, if they do not get on the right kind of medication, they end up trying to self-medicate themselves. And by self-medicate, they take drugs or alcohol, and they end up committing petty crimes, or they end up getting locked up because of drug and alcohol abuse. And so they're kind of a revolving door with the county jail system. They make repeated trips to the mental hospital for short stays. But in talking to these people and talking about what some of the newer drugs have really done for their family members in terms of being able to stabilize them, keep them away from the alcohol and drugs, keep them out of the jail system, keep them out of their mental hospital, I personally became convinced that the newer generation drugs do offer an opportunity for people's lives that we have not been able to offer to these people for a long time. And this they wanted this $10 million program as a pilot, and that would have served, I believe, about half of the eligible people. So this will serve far less than that, but we needed to serve a large enough people, numbers of people, on the program that the OSSU study will in fact have some statistically significant data about the savings that we will achieve in other parts of government. And so I believe very strongly in this, and I really think that we have an opportunity here to help people with mental illness.
Senator.
As you know, Madam Chair, you and I both sat down at dinner with some of the researchers involved in this, and I'm really convinced of the benefits, the savings, and the potential. I guess to add some clarity to this, I'd ask Sheila maybe, or anybody that knows, we know that 10 million would have done half the eligible. What's the kind of numbers that we're looking at with 1.9 million? I mean, what size of sample can you do in this pilot project?
Well, Senator Kitovan and Senator Shields, if I can do a little extrapolation here, I think 2.2 million for medication was estimated to serve 360, 370 people. So somewhere around between, I would say, 300, 340.
The point is, in my thinking, that creates a large enough sample to be statistically significant and can demonstrate for future legislatures that you actually are saving dollars by using second-generation drugs. Even though they cost more, you know, they end up saving, I think, money over the hospitalization and everything else that occurs with the first generation.
And in doing that, we're going to be able to say that with authority, you know, with a study behind it. So, Representative Wilkin,
the term atypical psychotic medication.
I wondered that myself.
Yeah.
I think it refers to the fact that they are the newer generation. As a, well, maybe get
like
someone up there. Maybe get someone up there smarter than me.
I thought it was some reference to legislators.
To be atypical. Well, I much on your someone is going to provide that, but I certainly personally understand this. With a child who has suffered from schizophrenia, and out of our six, we had our oldest son who was infected with this in his early 20s. Was on the streets in and out, and there is no way to control that child without some sort of drugs. Some respond differently to the drugs. Some are able to really live by themselves and function fairly well, and I know a young woman who can do that. Others need care all the time, but it is still better because they're not out in the streets tumbling around and causing trouble, and it's the only life that is left to them, but it is much better than without the drugs, but they are extremely
Okay, Representative Probeck.
Thank you. I apologize for not being here for the school committee. We just concluded revenue a few minutes ago. I want to comment about House Bill 3147 and now its incorporation into Senate Bill 941. As you know, I was the sponsor of that bill and have been very active in trying to promote it this session. And I'm pleased to see that it has been scheduled for some action, and I thank the chair and the co-chair for the consideration and the hundreds of requests that you've had for various funding options and needs. But I think the reason that I've been so outspoken on this particular bill is because I've seen the need and met with the families of these children and just really believe that this is a major service that we ought to be providing to people who are in this condition through absolutely no fault of their own and who are caught in a catch-22 that really has the ultimate effect of bankrupting their families in order to take advantage of other existing state services, and I think that sends a terribly wrong message. So while I recognize that the prospects for 3147 as originally drafted ended politically because of the inability to get the votes for it, I'm glad that it was that this concept of medically fragile children has been recognized with this additional appropriation. While I certainly wish it was far greater, wish we had the ability to do more, I appreciate this step and this recognition, and it's my hope also that even taking this step will raise this particular line item with the Mental Health Developmental Disability Services Division, which has had this as a line, but has apparently, from what I've heard, either chosen not to or just ignored that particular component. And I think that that's a terrible mistake, and that the MHCDSC ought to be a lot more sensitive and a lot more responsive to this population. I know they've applied for the for a waiver, and I hope that that comes through for families so they don't have to go into complete poverty. But this one's very important to me. I'll be watching it in the future, and I hope that this will be something that will emerge as a much higher priority within the division.
I'd like to make one more comment. I think, along with Medicaid fragile children and their needs, And this is another area that I feel has been totally neglected. It's far behind an adequate research when we're talking about the spinal research.
Yes,
it
just
reminded me that we have research for many, many things, millions and millions of dollars on heart, on diabetes, and on AIDS, and you name it. But when it comes to real research on this mental problem, our country and our state fall behind. And I think that we need to be thinking more seriously about that, because it is a huge need in our population to have treatment and to see what kinds of cause we use for this.
Well, we do have a motion before us. This is the discussion. Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing the has passed. Now we need to move it.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 941 as conceptually amended to by the amendments we just adopted to the full committee with due pass recommendation.
Representative Lewis has moved Senate Bill 941 to the full committee as amended conceptually, as we've just done, with a DUPAC recommendation. Is there any objection? Okay. Hearing and seeing none, that motion passes. Okay. Oh, carriers. All carry on the floor. He is on the floor. Okay. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 535. Oh, 537.
No people, neither one of them, minority reports on both of them.
As soon as you can,
except for everybody, you
Madam Chair, if we could start with Senate Bill 537, we have been asked to refer this to the House Rules, Elections, and Public Affairs Committee.
Okay. The Chair will move Senate Bill 537 to House Rules, Elections, and Public Affairs Committee.
Madam Chair.
Representative Grobe.
Is that without recommendation? Removing it without recommendation?
Probably, if we haven't looked at it. Let's just move it away. Yeah,
needs,
okay.
That needs to be part of
all right. Without recommendation. Senator Yee?
Can we move away from the subcommittee bill to a House committee without going through the full committee?
I don't know. Do you know the
rules
on that?
I don't know the answer to that question.
I've been told to see
it.
Ramona would be the...
Ramona, if you don't know. I would know that.
You want me to do that, Madam Chair?
Yes, why don't we deities for a second?
Okay.
Find out.
I'm going to go get in.
All right. So we're going to
do this one, and
that Senate Bill 537 needs to be moved to the full committee, and then the full committee needs to take action to move it to House Rules and Elections.
And Madam Chair, as an aside, I presume that that is also or also would be true of
Senate Bill 540.
Right.
And so when we,
a little bit later.
Right. Okay. So the Chair would move Senate Bill 537 to the full committee with no recommendation so that they can refer it to House Rules, Elections, and Public Affairs. Senator Yee.
Is there, what's the fiscal impact of this bill?
It doesn't matter.
But this is ways and means, though.
But, Senator.
Oh, detail.
Right.
The
value in this bill is the relating clause, I believe, that the Rules Committee has.
Uh-huh. The relating clause.
Yeah.
I see.
Okay. Is there any objection? Hearing or seeing none, that motion has passed. We will open the work session on Health Bill 2901. And John, if you'll...
Okay, Madam Chair, I have all kinds of handouts.
I don't want any.
Okay? That's Madam
I'll
Chair.
I'll take some.
All right. The first thing I'd like to hand out to you is what I have been given as far as a proposed amendment to the A. and Gross version of House Bill 2901. This is the -7. Thank you. -7 amendment.
Yes, Frank, whether you want it or not, you have one.
It looks like I got seven.
The second thing I would hand out is the revenue impact. This was prepared by the Legislative Revenue Office. And I also know that Representative Witt is here, and he's available probably to answer questions on this bill as well. I have also a fiscal impact statement and a staff measure summary. But let's get to the point.
All right. Why don't you just tell us?
Okay. As I understand, what you can see on the revenue impact of House Bill 2901 A and Gross is to, as it stands now, is to reduce taxes, tax revenue during the 99-01 biennium. And the A7 amendment, you'll notice, changes dates scattered throughout 2901. And this, as I understand it, would eliminate the revenue impact during the current or the upcoming biennium, the 99-01 biennium.
Representative Strobeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill was introduced by Representative Witt, who sits on House Revenue, which I chair, and we spent a lot of time working on this bill. I'm sure he can answer any specific questions. It was a constituent of Representative Witt who originally brought this forward, but essentially what this does is allow folks who are disabled and very within very strict definitions to qualify for the property tax deferral program, which has previously been available only to senior citizens. Mm-hmm. And we had testimony on it a couple of times. Like I said, worked the bill pretty carefully. We did have a bit of a revenue impact on this biennium, and that's what the amendments address. It pushes it out beyond the 9901 biennium, but nevertheless institutes that as a policy. And we felt that in the case of these individuals, it was very valid, especially since most of them would fall into this category of people who have become disabled during their life. Normally, you know, start out as full-bodied, healthy people and have some sort of condition that comes on them. Normally, the folks who are disabled from birth or from youth are not even able to ever save up enough to buy a house. And so this was a way to see that people who had fallen into this condition were not forced out of their home simply because they couldn't afford to pay the tax.
Just one question. When does the deferral cease?
The deferral ends up as a lien on the property. And so it's it accumulates over time until the point when the property would then be sold and the lien would be satisfied by the state.
Okay. Madam Chair, the revenue impact shows that it would start 99 to 2000. So that's the biennium we're in now. So is this revenue impact incorrect?
Well, if you look at the date of this impact statement, Senator, it's April 15th was the date this was prepared, and this was based on the A engrossed version of the bill without the amendments that we're contemplating now.
Okay. So what, another question. So after the amendment, what is it going to be?
Pushes it out. It basically moves these figures down to the starting in the 0103 biennium.
So instead of 99 to 2000, 2.8 million, it will be zero.
Correct.
And zero in the second line.
Right.
And then starts with 2.894 million at the third line.
Right.
Any other questions?
Another question.
Senator Yee?
Why are we getting all these revenue bills?
Because revenue's closed.
Oh, and we have...
We're near the end of the session.
We have the revenue
closed.
House revenue is still open, but the fact is that this had an impact on this biennium spendable dollars, so that's why it came to raising needs, because it decreased the available dollars in this biennium. I believe Representative Wick can speak to why he suggests the amendment to move it forward so that it doesn't have that impact anymore, but that would be action that this committee could then take.
Okay, we'll be at ease until we have another senator here.
I do want to point Madam Chair, I do want to point one thing out to you, and that is we have a fiscal impact statement that indicates that there would be some fiscal impact on the Department of Revenue. It appears the Department would be required to rewrite programming of the Senior Citizens Deferral Program to meet the requirements of this bill extending the tax deferral program. Now, presumably, since this deferral is postponed with the Dash 7 amendment, so too would the fiscal impact be postponed at least for a time. In order to prepare for the impact or for the implement this bill in 2001-02-103, there would be some guesses there would be some impact on the Department of Revenue to change its programming and so on.
Okay.
But the as it stands, without the Dash 7 amendment, we're looking at about $391,000 during the 9901
money. Okay, so that this was an earlier calculation. Oh,
that's right.
Well,
that's right.
Okay. Okay,
Madam Chair.
Representative Strobeck.
Move the dash A7 amendment to House Bill 2901.
Representative Strobeck has moved the dash A7 amendment to House Bill 2901. Is there a discussion?
I had a question.
Representative Wilson.
Does the lien is impacted by interest is, I presume, the same as the other, so it's a 6% interest rate, which I have long because I feel that we have actually been making money on this program, and I don't think that was the intent of the state to do that. Now, of course, we'll be impacted somewhat by the addition of the the disabled, and I'm certainly in favor of the bill, but I think that we need to reconsider that interest rate. Definitely, I don't believe that the purpose of this is to increase decrease the owner's equity so rapidly.
Representative Wilkin, is that done by rule or by law?
That's by law.
We need to revisit that law then.
Absolutely. I have revisited it.
You haven't, as always? Too big of an
impact. I'm complaining.
Yes, Representative Strobeck.
Representative Wilkin brought that amendment to the rest
of the committee. I see, okay.
We debated that fully, and the committee did not agree with that, part because there was testimony that that's sort of a break point, and you get interest much lower than that, and people could actually end up benefiting by going into the property tax deferral program.
Isn't that the purpose of
your low income?
And coming out of it having more
interest rate that they currently pay.
Any further? Is there any objection? Covering the scene, the motion passes.
Madam Chair.
Representative Strobeck.
I move House Bill 2901 as amended to the full committee with a disaster recommendation.
It has been moved that House Bill 2901 is moved to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Madam Chair, I'm a no because local governments really do not want any more property tax exemptions. They feel they are pretty strapped after the measure
Representative Strobeck.
Senator Yee, this program fully pays the property taxes. The state pays the property taxes 100% to the counties and to all the local districts, and then the state takes a lien on the value of the home. So all local property taxes are paid. There's no elimination of any local property tax.
But then we have another question. Income tax for general fund. We have less money for general fund.
Well, as Representative Wilkin just pointed out, this program over time has actually been making a little bit of money, so there is a fund available that can pay these taxes, and then the state gets the benefit of the interest charged and then recovers the entire amount of the taxes that they pay once the property is sold. So it really is a loan program to the occupants of the home, and no local property taxes are lost.
Well, if this is an impact that will happen following this biennium, I would prefer that we discuss this for the next session rather than now.
Okay, so the record will show Senator Yee as a no. Are there any other no's? Seeing none, the motion is accepted. Okay, we're going to open a work session on House Bill, Senate Bill 535.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I have asked Ted Waters from the Legislative Revenue Office, and I would note that Representative Simmons is here to speak to this bill. For the record, the fiscal analysis, fiscal impact is minimal with respect to Senate Bill 535. I have copies of it if you would like me to pass them out, but they do show a minimal impact.
Okay.
Of about
44,000. We're on 5:35.
Good.
Yeah, but that's
Sure, Keith. Do you have the dash 4 amendments before you?
Madam Chair, these are the dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 535 that I'm handing out now.
We're using the related.
That's right.
Okay.
I'd be happy to speak to the dash 4 amendments.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I am Representative Mark Simmons, and we have this bill before us in the House Rules, Elections, and Public Affairs Committee, and have this amendment adopted into the bill. And then because of the fact that there is some revenue impact during this biennium, it was suggested by our esteemed co-chairs of Ways and Means that we try to eliminate any possible revenue impact during this biennium, and even the revised revenue impact statement. It was originally $43 million and it's now down to $9 million. But we have been advised that it's still too high. We tried a dash 11 and some other ways to try to get around that. But we come to the conclusion that that's the best thing to do. And we stripped this out last night, so the bill would not have to be reprinted before it was before you here today. We had to go to the planners and then come back again to adopt this amendment in the bill. But the conclusion we have reached is that the dash 4 amendment with one a single one number change, which would be on page 8, changing the effective date from January 1, 2001 to January 1, 2002, is how we are going to is the method we are going to have to take to eliminate any revenue impact during the coming biennium. That would be on line 3, just changing 2001 to 2002.
Okay, just to understand, page 8, line 3, change the date January 1 from 2001 to 2002.
So, what this bill does, Chair Kutub, members of the committee, is changes the amount of federal tax deductibility for Oregon state tax purposes from $3,000 to $5,000 and then indexes it to inflation. And then it provides then the effective date of January 1, 2002. And in the future biennium, it will reduce taxes to Oregon taxpayers in the neighborhood of $258 million for biennium.
I think so. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I have a revenue impact statement that Ed Waters gave me, but I want to be sure that it is up to date. And it shows a general fund revenue impact in the 2001-03 biennium of $273 million. Is that right, Ed?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think the correct revenue impact statement should have a date of July 10, 1999. And if shaded box, upper right corner. And the bill number should be Senate Bill 535-84 with revised in bold letters. Briefly, I can enumerate what numbers are in that statement. For the 1999-01, by AM it shows a $9 million revenue.
That would be without changing the effective date.
That's correct. That is with the original dash A4 amendments with the January 1, 2001 effective date.
Okay.
continuing for 2001-03 biennium, it shows a $258 million revenue reduction. With the changes that we've discussed to the dash A4 amendments, that would be reduced somewhat. It would be in the neighborhood of $230 million reduction, I believe, for the 01-03 biennium with the change that we have discussed. At the 2003-05 biennium, about a $248 million reduction.
Madam Chair, if I could make sure that I've got those ads. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Prior to the amendment to the dash 4 amendment, which would change the date, we've got a $9 million revenue impact 9901 with the change that's been suggested or recommended, we'd have a zero revenue impact.
That is correct.
Okay. And for 2001-03, we're looking at 258 with no change. 258 million, 230 million with the changes.
That is approximately correct.
Okay. And 2003-05, $248 million.
That is correct.
Senator Wilkins, Representative Wilkins.
I'd like an explanation of what all we're doing with the bill. I mean, we look up here and I see that it's quite a change from the original one. Not about capital gains. So, is this an income tax deduction? A reduction in the rate of income tax.
Senator Kutub and Representative Loken, that is the effect. What it does is it increases the amount of deduction you have, the maximum deduction on your state taxes, the maximum deduction of federal taxes against your state return from $3,000 to $5,000. Just raises that, lets you deduct up to $5,000 of federal taxes paid for purposes of state tax calculation, calculating your total gross income.
And that's all it does.
And indexes that for inflation in the future.
But additional question now. We referred 537. It looks as if that's doing the same thing.
Well, we referred that bill for a relating clause.
Oh, all right.
And Madam Chair, Senator Kutub, I think the way it turns out now, it would have been a whole lot simpler just to bring these A4s down to have and put in 537.
Thank you very much.
Representative Krobeck.
Thank you, Minister. It's a technical question. The changes you to 2002 reference sections 1 and 2 of the Act, but there also are references on page 4, for example, to instructing the Department of Revenue to start making the calculations on cost of living adjustments starting in 2001. So those numbers need to be adjusted to those dates, even though the effective date of that section wouldn't be until 2002.
Who would appear, Chair, you have members of the committee, Representative Strobeck, that you would be correct, that the 2001 on line 16 should be changed to 2002, and on line 24, the calendar year 2000 should be changed to 2001.
Okay, steady down. On page 4, line 16, where it says January 1, 2001, make that 2002. Line 24 of page 4, after calendar year 2000, make that calendar year 2001.
Correct.
Looking through here, is there anything to see?
I don't know if
there's anything. I think those were, that was original.
Okay. Yep.
Chair, I'm sorry, representing
George.
Question. Similar question. Excuse me. Basically, if I'm reading this right, we've basically been taxing our folks about $258 million a year for one taxes that they've already paid. In other words, we're double taxing them for that amount of money.
Madam Chair, Senator Chutub, and Senator George, I believe that's correct.
If we heard that out and said everybody is being now being double taxed, how many anybody estimate what those dollars would be?
I would be afraid to guess, actually, but we are, in fact, on any federal taxes above $3,000 that you pay to the federal government, you are also paying taxes on those dollar tax dollars you've already paid to the state, to the federal government. You're paying taxes on those to the state of Oregon also, currently. And you still will continue to be doing that on taxes over five.
Over five, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, the chair would move the dash A4 amendment to Senate Bill 535. Your discussion?
As amended?
No, I'm moving the amendment. Oh, as amended, you
yeah.
Got as changed the year. Sorry, thank you, Senator. On pages 4 and 8, the date from 2001 to 2002, and on page 4 to 2001, the year 2000. Is there a discussion? Senator Ashiel.
Yeah, I won't comment long, but it's, to me it's ironic that this ends up in Ways and Means Human Services subs, because we often spend time working with the poorest of the poor, and this doesn't have much of an effect on those folks. Yet I'm afraid it will take resources away from what we do for the poorest of the poor, and so I can't support these amendments or the bill itself. Thank you.
Is there any objection? No, there's no vote. Motion has passed. I would move Senate Bill 535 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? No. Senator Shields is a no. That motion. I want everybody to stay right where they are. Except you folks. I want the committee to stay. Yeah, you can stay as long as you want. Oh, Ed does. We have just
one taxation and
we have enough 40. And 5028. Okay. So, okay. House Bill 2947. We will open the work session. No.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I have a staff measure summary and a revenue impact handout for you on this, and would note that there is a minimal fiscal impact on House Bill 2947. I'll hand out staff measure summary.
Representative Lewis.
Yes, well, before you go too far, I scheduled this today on behalf of Representative Kraft, but my instructions were to him to have amendments to it that would not create a revenue impact in this biennium. And we do not have any amendments, so that I know of. Unless you
No, Madam Chair, Representative Lewis, I don't have any amendments. I believe, however, that if sections 25 and 28 of the BN Growth version of this bill were changed, that we may move back any revenue impact. But I would want to confirm that with Ed Waters as well.
Madam Chair. I think too there was another interest that another amendment that Representative Krupp wanted to offer to this bill that would be not just changing the fiscal impact, but something that he needed specifically for schools in Lebanon.
Madam Chair.
And Representative Strobeck.
If I could just help, because Representative Krupp had talked to me, he was interested in creating a tax credits for contributions to school foundations, not just the tax deduction that currently exists. I don't see that amendment here either.
Madam Chair, I think we need to defer any action on this bill until we can get, which I don't believe will be today, but until we can get the appropriate amendments from Representative Krupp.
And if I could just add also,
okay.
Chair, that 2937 came through House Revenue, which I chaired, and which came back from the Senate rather different with the elimination of the political tax credit, which is something that we did not support in the House.
Okay.
So this bill eliminates the political tax credit.
Okay.
That's pretty big.
Oh, that's right.
Well, I would hope that if there was that bill, that there would be
right, that would have been
to delete that.
Okay. Well, we'll close the work session. Right. We do have a couple of things here, a couple of other things to address. The Senate, first of all, I want to bring back up for consideration an amendment clarifying amendments we passed yesterday on House Bill 5029. These are the Dash 5 amendments, which they're basically what we have added, and we have copies of those amendments, is just language that says notwithstanding any other law, and this is just makes it a little bit tighter amendment. That was brought to our attention earlier today, so.
Mm-hmm. The U.S. must have scored.
Oh, I was not. So I'll open a work session on House Bill 5029 and move the Dash 5 amendment into the bill for discussion. Any objection? Senator Yee, you objected yesterday. I guess I'll give you that right to do that again.
Oh, I haven't come finishing yet. Yes,
okay.
I yet.
Okay. So Senator Yee is a no vote, but the motion passes, and we'll move. The chair would move House Bill 59 as amended by the Dash 5 amendment to the full committee with the new pass recommendation. Any objection to House Bill 5029?
Oh, well.
You just voted no on the
amendment. Yes. Well, I'll vote yes with reservation.
All right. The motion. Okay, close the work session on 5029 and open a work session on Senate Bill 540, the spinal cord injury bill, and we will. The chair would move Senate Bill 540 to the full committee to be referred to the Public Affairs Committee. Is there a discussion?
What is that?
Any objections?
Hearing and seeing none, that motion passes. And so we'll close the work session on 5:40, and I think we are done with our work for today. So during the committee, and tomorrow, I don't think we have anything. The full committee will meet at 4 o'clock. I know transportation.